Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The parents of Otto Warmbier, the American student who died after being imprisoned in North Korea, issued a stinging rebuke this morning to President Trump, who praised North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un at a summit this week. Trump said he believed Kim's claim that he knew nothing about the fatal injuries that Warmbier sustained while in North Korean custody. In a statement this morning, the Warmbiers wrote, "Kim and his evil regime are responsible for unimaginable cruelty and inhumanity. No excuses or lavish praise can change that."
And that's just one of the big stories burning through Washington this week. There's the fallout from Michael Cohen's testimony before Congress, a story about President Trump pushing through top secret security clearance for his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and another Democrat tosses his hat in the ring for the 2020 election. So let's bring in Jesse Holland, Associated Press race and ethnicity writer and a host at C-SPAN's Washington Journal. Jesse, good to have you back.
How you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. And Chad Pergram is senior Capitol Hill reporter, producer rather, for Fox News. Chad, good to talk with you.
Gentlemen, thank you.
And we will start with you, Chad, and this summit in Vietnam, which collapsed without any deal with North Korea. The President Trump says it was a success. And here he is on Fox News last night talking about Kim Jong-un.
He's a real personality, and he's very smart. He's sharp as you can be, and he's a real leader, and he's pretty mercurial.
Chad, how does that sound now with this statement from the Warmbiers and the meeting's collapse?
Well, it was very interesting to hear members of Congress on both sides of the aisle here, you know, very critical of the president for not bringing up Otto Warmbier and his fate. Democratic Senator, you know, from Ohio, Sherrod Brown, represents the Warmbiers. Rob Portman from Ohio also. I spoke with Steve Shabbat, Republican congressman from Cincinnati, used to, you know, represent the Warmbiers. He seemed to be reluctant to criticize the president a little bit, though. He said, I think that it was a mistake not to bring it up. But he didn't want to get too far out there in criticizing the president. And that's sometimes what we hear on Capitol Hill, is that you have people on, especially on the Republican side of the aisle, who are critical of the president, but they don't want to go too deep. And that was something we saw there. Bob Menendez, the Democratic senator from New Jersey, who's the top Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, thought it was amateur hour how they played this. I will say, though, that one wonders what members of Congress on both sides of the aisle in Washington would have interpreted as success. Many applauded the fact that the president walked out. But then again, had he not walked out and actually secured something, people here probably would have been very skeptical. And there were a lot of allusions made to what happened in Reykjavik in 1985 between President Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev, where they said, well, Reagan got up and left. Well, the reason President Reagan got up and left is that, you know, Mikhail Gorbachev came in with a pretty stunning proposal to eliminate all nuclear weapons. And Reagan would not budge from not eliminating SDI. But what that did, the fact that the Reykjavik summit in 1985 blew up, it paved the way. The Soviet Union was obviously on the decline. They then got the INF treaty a couple years later. START talks, the START treaty, reduction of nuclear weapons, when before we'd had SALT, which was limitation of nuclear weapons. That failed summit in Reykjavik paved the way. So you never know what a failed summit, what it might produce down the road.
Jesse, Chad makes a good point, but everyone from analysts to ex-diplomats to late-night comedians are sort of calling this summit a failure. I mean, differences are emerging over, you know, how negotiations went and just exactly what demands the North Koreans made. Was it a lifting of all sanctions or just the major economic ones? It looks like it was just the major economic ones. But do you think, Jesse, it was a failure, something of a stain on the president's diplomatic efforts?
Well, one of the things that this has taught us and hopefully has shown people in Washington is that there's a reason why you have negotiators go in front of a major policy discussion with another country, because there's a lot of groundwork that comes with these type of negotiations. President Trump went in wanting to do the negotiations himself, but there's a lot of things that had to be discussed before any major deal was made. So we saw the president go in and try to do these things himself, and we see the result of that as well. So he can claim that he's opened up talks with North Korea, but it's going to be hard for him to claim a success when all of the details that come before the major announcements are made weren't done in advance. And on another thing, it's not really all that surprising that President Trump won't criticize the president of North Korea or Saudi Arabia or Russia, simply because he wants to do personal one-on-one negotiation with these leaders. And it's hard to negotiate with someone you're calling evil. So he can't be seen as criticizing these leaders when he, on the other hand, wants to be seen in the same room with them, negotiating with them one-on-one.
That's the fundamental point that I think Jesse brings up here as to why there was not criticism or a discussion about warm beer with Kim. Because members of Congress said, you know, that's the problem. That sort of gives a wink and a nod, an entree, perhaps to the Saudi regime or other brutal regimes around the world, that this seems to be okay with the American president if he's not going to bring that up in a one-on-one meeting with Kim Jong-un.
Okay, to get to everything we want to get to, we got to move on. So let's talk about Michael Cohen. NBC News political director Chuck Todd described the House oversight hearing this week as the first unofficial hearing of the impeachment process for the president. Jesse, what do you make of that and how Democrats are now emerging in the days that followed this hearing and how they're positioning themselves?
And I think that Chuck Todd may have gone a little bit too far with that because I'm not 100% sure Democrats are even going to try to impeach President Trump at this point.
I mean, they're not talking about it really at this point.
Because they're getting all of this damaging information out without having to take that step. Remember, when Republicans impeached President Clinton, it backfired on them. Democrats are still able to get all of this information that they've been looking for on President Trump without even getting close to an impeachment process. And keep in mind, they're not even done with Michael Cohen yet. He's coming back next week. And now we hear a discussion about the transcript of a Michael Cohen book that he wanted to write about President Trump being brought up by Republicans. So I think the whole Michael Cohen issue, they're nowhere close to being finished with it. And I think Democrats are going – you're going to hear these type of hearings from Democrats between now and the next presidential election.
And this is when you talk with some of the Democratic leaders. You know, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said, you know, when the hearing was going on, that she had not heard, quote, a word about it. And it's notable that impeachment was not really part of the discussion. Now, Jerry Nadler, who chairs the Judiciary Committee, that's not the committee that was holding the hearing, but would deal with articles of impeachment, indicated that he thought that there might have been indications that the president had committed a crime. But he drew a line between that and impeachment. And that's something that Steny Hoyer, the majority leader, had also pointed out. He said, we have to see what's in the Robert Mueller report. Again, we keep hearing these rattlings that it might be coming soon. We've certainly heard that before. But I think Democrats are going to keep their powder dry until they see that Mueller report and a battle, an internecine battle in the Democratic Party over to impeach or not to impeach. That's bad news. And Nancy Pelosi, she's fought that battle before. She did in 06 and 07 when they got the House majority back then. And there were a lot of people who wanted to impeach President George W. Bush. That certainly didn't happen then.
Jesse, to you, I mean, Republicans, you know, he still has a 90% approval rating among Republicans. The president does. And I'm just wondering, you know, do you think the Cohen testimony did anything at all to move the needle or change how voters view this president?
Well, I will tell you that I think that the president's supporters, no matter what the Democrats bring up, I think his supporters will stay on his side. It's those switch voters, those moderate Republicans, those Democrats who may have voted for President Trump in the last election. It's those voters that Democrats are shooting for. They want to put a doubt in their mind that if they vote for President Trump again, that this entire process could continue for a second term. They're not the fight is not over the people who like and want to vote for President Trump. The fight is over those moderate Republicans, those Republicans who those never Trumpers who they never really were in love with President Trump, and for those Democrats who voted for President Trump. Those are the people that they're putting this information out there for. They want them to reconsider their support of the president.
Okay, Chad, I want to ask you about Vice President Mike Pence, who is at the Conservative Political Action Conference today, CPAC, and he's blasting Democrats as socialists for what he's calling their hard left agenda.
What Medicare for All really means is quality health care for none. The only thing green about the so-called Green New Deal is how much green it's going to cost taxpayers if these people ever pass it into law.
So what do you make of this new line of attack? Well, it's not exactly a new line of attack, but it's certainly a refreshed line of attack, especially in the context, as we've been talking about, Democrats who are sort of fighting amongst themselves, the far left and the more moderate Democrats as they move towards the 2020 election.
And this was the fight that Republicans had, you know, between the moderate mainstream Republicans and ultra-conservatives. These are the schisms and fissures you see in the Democratic Party. Obviously, what Vice President Pence is trying to do is portray the entire Democratic Party as left-leaning, for the new Green Deal, which is certainly not the case, all for Medicare for All, which is certainly not the case. That said, the reason Democrats have control of the House is they elected moderates in swing and battleground districts in California and Virginia and Maine. And so they're not going to latch on to those ideas. Here's a perfect example. They passed the gun bill, expanded background checks through the House this week. The vote was 240 to 190. There were two Democratic no's. One of them was one of these freshmen who won a swing district, Jared Golden, a freshman from northern Maine, because, you know, firearms are popular there. You're going to have those types of Democrats who are in the middle, who aren't going to support that, and that's why it's going to be very hard for the left of the Democratic Party to move any part of this agenda.
Another interesting week, to say the least, in Washington. Jesse Holland is Associated Press race and ethnicity writer and a host of C-SPAN's Washington Journal. Chad Pergram is a senior Capitol Hill producer for Fox News. Gentlemen, thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.